surmountable. Is that a word? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I've never used the word surmountable. Well, now I'm just thinking like surmountable, which is like a really weird knight's name. Let's get back.
Ride me, squire.
Maybe that's like the horse's name.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. That's a good like knight's horse's name, surmountable. Yeah. Welcome to Monsters and Monster Class. I'm Ellie Odi.
I'm Jared Warnigal.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And on this episode, we are taking a look at the adult red dragon in Pathfinder, second edition. So another Pathfinder monster episode here. Dragons within Pathfinder are kind of what you would expect from Dungeons & Dragons and just about anywhere else. They have the chromatic and the metallic. Red dragons are the chromatic, and they are considered the fiercest of the chromatic within the Pathfinder universe. They are evil. They are arrogant. They look to subjugate others, generally don't interact with anybody and make the people they've enslaved do it. They have a treasure hoard. It's all very typical dragon stuff. We're not really doing anything all that exciting there, but it's fine.
Hey, it we talked about more. Red dragons first in our Hot Ones episode. We talked Did about we? Them briefly, yeah.
Oh.
I don't for, know for how long. That's probably a terrible discussion, but yeah, check out the Hot Ones episode.
Oh, yeah. That was for the D&D red dragon.
Yes.
Just because, yeah, if you're new here, we've primarily been a D&D podcast and have been branching out into Pathfinder stuff. And so a lot of our talks are about Pathfinder relating back to Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition and what's different and blah, blah, blah. Spoilers, we're liking Pathfinder a lot. But it also dawned on us yesterday that we've been playing 5th edition D&D for 10 years now, basically, since it was like a playtest packet, if you count that. So it's like no wonder we're feeling burnt out on it. All right. Anyway, so we'll go into the stat block. We'll go through it, talk about things, what we like, how to use them, what's cool about them, what we think's busted, etc. Usual kind of monster highlight episode. So the adult red dragon is a creature level 14 in Pathfinder. It is huge, chaotic, evil. Perception of plus 26 is dark vision. It has a scent size that's imprecise out to 60 feet and a smoke vision. Smoke vision is basically it can't be... smoke doesn't obscure its vision. It can essentially see through smoke, which makes sense because it creates fire and probably create a lot of smoke. And so smoke being obscured by smoke is a thing in Pathfinder. And so here's a way for the thing that makes smoke to not be obscured by it.
Yeah, it's interesting. They have so many vision types. If you just look at 5th edition, they just had blind sight out to 60 feet. And that kind of did the same thing.
Right. I like how it's not that because it still gives you the option to really be able to hide from this thing and hide behind stuff because it's not this like omnipotent being. It could just see through smoke.
Right.
All right. Languages, common, draconic, dwarven, and orcish. Nothing exciting there. Change them up as you need, as always. Skills, acrobatics plus 23, arcana plus 25, athletics plus 29, deception plus 25, diplomacy plus 25, intimidation plus 27, and stealth plus 23. Super high skills. Some of these seem kind of silly. Like a dragon doing acrobatics is like hard to picture when that would come up. Unless you'd like doing aerial maneuvers.
A dragon on a tightrope.
Right. Go aerial maneuvers.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense. Yeah, I mean, really any time that you think of a dragon, dexterous isn't specifically what comes to mind. Like I wouldn't expect him to be clumsy, but...
Right.
Yeah, I don't anticipate them doing many fine motions of balance or other acrobatic displays.
Yeah, but then again, maybe we're thinking about that too much D&D mindset, because within Pathfinder, there is more like in combat mechanical things that interact with skills. Like if you're trying to trip someone, it's an athletics check over their reflex save DC. I'm sure there's probably something that uses acrobatics.
Yeah, so the acrobatics skill comes up when you use the escape basic action. So you can use acrobatics, but you can also use athletics anytime you want to escape. So you're going to use athletics, which is a plus 29. So mechanically, nothing that's immediately jumping to mind.
Right. Plus 23 stealth feels a little funny.
Yeah. There is maneuver in flight. So you did say aerial acrobatics. Oh, okay. So that actually kind of fits. Otherwise, you know, we've got tumble through if the dragon wants to squeeze through your space real quick.
The huge one, yeah.
Yeah. And then balance, where they could cross a narrow surface. So I am just imagining like a dragon kind of tiptoeing across like a tiny chasm.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the aerial maneuvers.
Yep. And again, it may be some sort of class of feature or ability that triggers the enemy having to make an acrobatics skill check for whatever reason.
Right.
All right, strength plus 7, dex 3, con 6, intelligence 3, wisdom 4, charisma 5. These are all pluses. Again, if you come from the 5th edition, they just give like what the plus is. It's not saying its strength is 7, it's plus 7, which is like 30-something. So very high stuff there. AC at 37, fortitude save of 28, reflex save of 25, will save of 26, and plus 1 status to all saves versus magic. And these numbers really just are insane. Like an AC of 37 is unheard of in D&D. And that's definitely something that's been like a sticker shock thing, especially as you're looking at higher Pathfinder stuff. Of getting used to and not having that bounded accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I went into a long rant about it in our group chat that was basically, it's like the numbers are, as you said, they're sticker shock. But when you compare the percentages to what 5th edition is generally dealing with, it's nowhere near as terrifying, because you know that AC of 37, okay, you're also probably going to have like a plus 25, 26 to hit. And on top of that, a lot of what Pathfinder's built around is decreasing those numbers by small amounts, but stacking those small amounts until it becomes goes from insurmountable to surmountable. Is that a word? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I've never used the word surmountable. Well, now I'm just thinking like surmountable, which is like a really weird knight's name. Let's get back.
Ride me, squire.
Maybe that's like the horse's name.
Yeah, that's what I say. That's a good like knight's horse's name, surmountable.
Anyways, so that 37, you know, drops to a 35, and then you drop it to a 34, and then you're increasing your attacks via, you know, magic weapon or obviously item bonuses and things like that, to the point where you're probably hitting them 50% of the time. And then you look at Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, and you're like, okay, what's a adult red dragon's AC? It's 19. It's a challenge rating 17. By that point, I probably have a plus 10 to hit. That gives me about a 50-ish percent chance I'm going to hit them. So, you know, a lot of times it seems like it comes out to that amount. They're just able to tweak the math more because the numbers are unbounded, as Will has said in the past.
Right. It's definitely, no, I just feel like it takes more care from the players in Pathfinder to find those ways to lower their AC or bump their stuff and kind of whittle that down, where in 5th edition D&D, that's not really the case as much.
Yeah, it's almost discouraged to try and debuff dragons compared to just smacking them. Because if you spend all of your time casting spells on them or doing whatever, they've got legendary resistances, they've got advantage against magic saves. Adult red dragon doesn't have that, but regardless, 3 legendary resistances a day plus extremely high saving throws means a lot of time you just feel like you're wasting your turn as a spellcaster if you're not just blowing it up. Yeah, it is. And then I think I see a lot of people say that it's a common issue when new people come into Pathfinder, is they think, I'm going to have that same mentality of just let's blow it up before it kills us. And then you're never really able to pierce through its armor. It leads to more tactical play.
You're right. For sure. And also another, just one last thing with bounded accuracy before we unbounded accuracy before we move on, is it does make the differences in levels huge. Within 5th edition, like obviously there is a big difference if you're level 3 and you go up against an adult red dragon, you're going to die, and you're not going to win that fight because it's just going to breath attack you or just smack you down, and that's that, because the damage does go up. The damage is unbounded in 5th edition, but it could still miss you. You can still hit it, and there always feels like there's, you're kind of useful, like any, like even like bringing along low level NPC to like take pot shots from the back, it has its uses because they will sometimes hit and do a bit of damage. And it always felt weird to me, or like when we were doing bigger monster episodes, like the elder elementals of these huge like storms that you fight at like level challenge rating 20 plus, and like level one commoners of crossbows can be like be shooting at it from afar and having a big impact, and always just felt odd, and there's not much you could do about it.
It's the within, Goblin Arena problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, within Pathfinder second edition here, it's very much as things level up, lower levels become worthless. In the campaign I'm playing with, we're currently level 3. We got in a fight that went really, really poorly. That entire party's cursed. Like, no one could roll over a 5, I swear. And then DM keeps rolling 20s. And it actually got to a really bad situation, which was not intended to be, really quick. We're also all new, so still learning the system, probably weren't playing optimally. And so they had a NPC that was kind of with us, but wasn't really actually going to be fighting alongside us yet, join into the fight, who was level 12. And the difference between our level 3 and level 12 PCs were absolutely insane. The level 12 PC could not be hit. Their AC was just too high to be hit by any of the monsters that were out there that were currently decimating us. And it was impossible there for them to miss. And the damage that they did basically one-shotted everything.
Because I'm sure they were critting 50% of the time, let alone
from yeah, basically every hit was a crit. Yeah, because you have that threshold of 10 or above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good identifier of, like, it, you know, not to critique that DM who definitely listens to the podcast. You're doing a great job. You're just learning a new system.
You are. also, no, they didn't do anything wrong. It was
right. There's right, bad rolls and everything.
Just, yeah.
Right.
And they were just stepping in to make sure we didn't TPK off of wolves.
Major thing to keep in mind if you're going to try and have that level disparity, you can't do it in the same ways because it's, you know, that's a 9-level difference. Whereas you say in 5th edition, you do a 9-level difference. It's there, but it's not that big a deal. Like you can still be on, I don't know. It won't totally overshadow the entire fight. Just mostly.
Right. Right. All right. That was a big tangent about bounded and unbounded accuracy, but
we're
going to
continue going off on random tangents about comparing Pathfinder and 5th edition, and if you don't like that, I'm sorry. Come back in 2 years when we learn Pathfinder well enough to get over our 5th edition pains.
Right. All right, moving on. Hit points 305. It's immune to fire, paralyzed, and sleep, and has a weakness to cold of 15. Weaknesses within Pathfinder are not like vulnerabilities. It doesn't double the damage. It's basically saying, in this case, cold at 15, if you do cold damage to it, in addition to the damage that you do, 15 extra damage will be added on top. Cold 15 weakness is pretty strong, so that's a nice thing to exploit, but not so strong it's going to like trivialize the entire fight. So, again, another little tangent. I love the weakness resistance system. Or I don't think they call it resistance, whatever they call it in here. But
yeah, it's obviously allows for much more specificity in terms of what you're allowing to have weaknesses or resistances. Cold 15 seems, I mean, you say it's not a lot. That seems like a ton, actually, because even if you're just doing, you know, 5 cold damage, then that's 20. I mean, it's a pretty solid chunk of its HP. What I'm lacking here is I don't know enough about how much damage spells do to say whether or not that's like going to be too much or make the like trivialize things
to me. And again, like, we haven't played at this high of level really, and so yeah, I'm in the same boat of not having a good grasp on spell damage, but it seems like it's a good amount of damage, but not to the point of trivializing the entire fight.
Right,
it's not like what making him vulnerable and double damage would be
most of what I obviously double damage would be absurd, right? It definitely lends to finding ways to prepare yourself. You know, if you know this information, if your party is able to figure out that adult red dragons have a weakness to cold damage, maybe before you go and fight it, you go and find a salve to put on your weapon that does cold damage. And now the fighter is doing significantly more damage, and you know, kind of keeping those things in mind to make the fight possible in the first place. And that's I think how the weaknesses feel a lot of times. It's like you almost need to exploit them, because if you don't, you're going to have a very, very hard time.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we've talked about it before as well, the resistances. I think this is one of those systems that you can actually pretty safely rip out and put in your D&D game.
Yeah, the amounts you might need to tweak, but
yeah, obviously, like everything is a little bit changed here, so just look at it and figure it out. The resistances, we talked about that. You do have to be careful where you're creating a damage threshold that can't be possibly overcome. But yeah, I like the idea of figuring out a way to do cold damage consistently, just blowing up your damage.
Right.
So you can, this becomes a very, very difficult encounter for a low level party that can now overcome it through some kind of trickery, which is always fun. You just punk the dragon with your cold damage weapons and the DM is happy because they wanted you to do that. That's great.
And I think that's a really interesting way of putting it too, because yeah, I even feel that like if my party was preparing in that way, you know, they succeeded on the recall knowledge check regarding dragons, which is a DC 32. So it's not low. And once they succeed it, they now know, oh, it's a weakness to cold. There are stories in the past of dragons being felled or at least held back due to cold damage in some fashion. Now you've got a quest for them to obtain a method of consistent cold damage. And then there's the actual confrontation where the dragon, recognizing the cold damage, probably being pretty confident at the start of the fight, is now focusing the person who is using cold damage, or people, whatever, if it's multiple, however that's handled. But it just creates this narrative that you can read the stat block and you see it play out and you're like, oh, I am inspired to put this situation together and watch my players succeed or fail miserably. But it's the possibility is there. I get childlike joy reading these stat blocks. I really do. Like it talking about being that burnt out. I mean, I've been DMing fifth edition for I think 7, almost 8 years now. I'm coming up on, and I'm just so tired of having to tweak monsters to have fun with them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to work with it. These stat blocks that we keep seeing over and over and over to make really cool encounters.
Let's move on.
All right. Moving on, then, this is this Dragon Heat, which is an aura of 5 feet, 3d6 fire damage, DC 13 basic reflex. I realize I forgot to actually specifically look up how that works. My assumption is at the start of its turn, any creature within 5 feet makes a DC 30 reflex save or takes 3d6 fire damage. But
so it is at the start of your own turn. If you're within 30 feet of it. Yeah. Okay. So it's once again, something that's putting it on the players a little bit more so. But yes, at the start of their turn, if they're within the 5 feet, so really only going to be targeting your marshals, as it states, DC 30 basic reflex save on a, I believe it's usual, stuff here where if you fail, then it's the 3d6 damage. If you critically fail, it's doubled, and then reverse on the successes. Have it on a success, none on a critical success. If that is incorrect, let us know in the comments, because that is not specified in the aura or really anywhere that I can find.
And then the next one is also not super clear. Frightful presence. Like, I mean, I understand the intent of it. It's a 90-foot aura. It says DC 33. I'm assuming that the wisdom save doesn't specify it here in the...
Oh, it doesn't specify it. That is a little odd. So yeah, I'm assuming that fear is always the same one. And so that's, you said wisdom. Is wisdom even right? Isn't it?
Will save. You're right.
Will save. That's the, yeah, that's the word we're looking for. Yes.
D&D-ing it up. Will save.
Likely that is a will save. Same deal. It's the start of your turn. And that one I did find where it is a, if you succeed, you take... I did look it up and now I forgot it.
So frightful, it sounds like frightful presence is not unique.
It is not. So frightful presence is specifically something in the bestiary, page 343. Here, so it's,
I
just like,
if I could.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. A creature that first enters the area must attempt a will save. Regardless of the result of the saving throw, the creature is temporarily immune to this monster's frightful presence for 1 minute. A critical success on the will save, the creature is unaffected. A regular success, the creature is frightened 1. Failure, the creature is frightened 2. Critical failure, the creature is frightened 4. The frightened condition is you take a status penalty equal to the value of the frightened condition to all your checks and DCs, unless specified otherwise. At the end of each of your turns, the value of the frightened condition decreases by 1. Okay, that's that, again, that kind of self-referential rules thing we've been honestly complaining about a bit with Pathfinder. It's like just this frightful presence in the stat block and does not explain how it works. And I'm actually even looking at it digitally on their official Pathfinder Nexus, and it's not even a click and you could click. So I got to look that up. And that says you get the frightened condition, then you got to look up the frightened condition.
At least I don't have to Google it and find a tweet from 3 years ago.
Right. That's true. That's very true. It's like, yeah, all the information is out there. It's just, you got to, it's a rabbit hole. You got to keep going. Yeah. So it's, yeah, within 5th edition dragons and just a lot of large, scary, legendary creatures have a frightful presence. I think it's even the exact same name in 5th edition, but it's usually like in action or part of your multi-attack that they have to do once. And then it always just feels kind of really crappy, like to take up your actions with that. I like how this is just automatic. I do also like, though, how they added in with that you're immune for a minute. Regardless, even if you fail, you don't have to keep rolling and keep getting frightened more and more and more.
Until you're like frightened 20.
Right.
Yeah, and the status penalty is much more interesting as well compared to frightened condition from 5th edition, which is just disadvantage on ability checks and attack rolls while within the line of sight of the source of your fear, and then the creature can't willingly move closer to its source of fear. So it...
Which
to me,
sucks.
Kind of, it does.
Can,
yeah,
suck really bad.
Right. It either totally sucks or it totally doesn't matter. If you're looking at a spellcaster, right, then it literally, you just don't care at all. Whereas if you're a martial character, it's genuinely the worst thing that could happen. And as a martial character, you're more likely to have your wisdom lower than the spellcasters. So it seems like this kind of loop, yeah, that it affects the people that it should almost affect the least, or it's the most painful towards.
Right. So yeah,
the other issue is D&D has the situation that Pathfinder has where you can create these weird hard locks on your party where if you have a very bad wisdom, you absolutely are going to get frightful presence. You're never going to be able to unfrightful presence yourself, and you're going to spend the rest of your fight there. This one, as a decaying situation, makes a lot more sense and works a lot better.
Yeah, because even if you get that critical fail, you know, all right, this sucks, but one, I can keep doing what I want to do. I'm just going to be bad at it. And also, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. And it can make for cool character moments to play out in the fight about how you're initially struck with this fear and you kind of find your courage and your footing, so to speak, as the battle goes on. As the adrenaline really kicks in.
Love it.
Yeah. All right, and then adult red dragons also get attack of opportunity for the jaws only. We'll get to what the jaws in a minute here. Just to clarify, because this is different within Pathfinder 2nd edition, not everything automatically gets an attack of opportunity. It's the same idea of what it is in D&D. If something like leaves your reach, you get a free attack against them. They're more powerful in here because more things trigger it, such as like doing a manipulate action within someone's reach or... a ranged attack, even moving around a creature. Like if you don't leave the reach and the creature has attack of opportunities, triggers it. And it does not trigger the multiple attack penalty, which is a Pathfinder specific thing as well. Whereas the more you attack in your turn, you get a -5 and -10 to your attacks, and attacks of opportunity exist outside of that, which is nice. So it's good to see it. I'm starting to get the impression on these kind of like bigger, more legendary, just famous monsters, a lot of them have that attack of opportunity too. Add to that sort of fear factor, and that you need to be really careful about positioning, and it just makes sense that an adult red dragon would have it.
I just imagine an adult red dragon making the party eat bugs. Fear factor. It's just welcome to my lair. Eat these bugs. Anyways, tag of a opportunity. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. All right, and then moving on to action. So moving in Pathfinder is an action, so speeds are in here. So they have speed of 50 feet and then a fly speed of 150 feet.
That's a lot of flying speed.
Yeah, it is a lot.
Just that's it. That's a lot. I mean, yeah. 40 movement speed and 80 fly speed in the 5th edition one, whereas 80 was still a lot. I mean, obviously 150 is nearly twice that. So it's, you know, it goes to, I guess what comes to mind is that idea once again of, you need to level the playing field before fighting this thing. If you are just out in an open field and a dragon attacks, it is going to absolutely destroy your party by coming down, breath weaponing, which we'll get to, obviously, maybe making an attack, flying off, whatever, and then coming right back once the breath weapon recharges and it can do it all again. There's no reason for it to sit there and just hover above, you know, 20 feet and wait for you to earthrend it down or whatever. I'm sure there's some spell to bring a dragon to the ground. It's you got to be prepared.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I know that is like, yeah, an issue in fifth edition of playing dragons too optimally in that sense of just stay way out of range and flying away and then diving in breath weapon and leaving again until it comes back. I'm not familiar enough with like the high level spells and capabilities of PCs to really have an opinion on if that's counterable.
I'm just going to assume the answer is yes. Somebody in the comments, though, let us know. What spell would you use to stop a dragon from cheesing the party?
Yeah. Or, again, that's maybe too D&D focused. Just what ability? Maybe the marshals can do it. I mean, I know there's, like, the Titan Wrestler skill feat, which allows you to grapple and stuff multiple size categories above you.
Yeah.
I don't know where the limit is, so I don't know if you could go up to huge. But like, I mean, your athletics does get up there quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like my level 3 characters focused around that stuff has plus 12 to athletics. So at plus at 14, it's probably at the point where I could probably grapple a dragon.
Yeah, that sounds awesome though.
Yeah.
Like I'm loving the idea of your fighter jumping up into the air and like wrapping around the dragon's neck and pile driving them into the ground. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I love it.
It's kind of what I want.
I need to look into those. I also know there's skill feats for like getting marshals jump distances really, really crazy.
Yeah.
Where they can kind of do that stuff, leap into the air to smack a flying creature out of the. So.
How fun.
Should be ways.
I mean, just mathematically though, you've got a 50 foot cone, 150 foot fly speed. You could probably just toast every party if you played this right. Can you jump 50 feet in the air? I don't know. Probably not.
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Gonna start practicing now.
All right. Moving on to get the actions. There's 4 melee actions. I'm just gonna kind of rapid fire through these because they're nothing too different between them, just different options. And again in Pathfinder, you have 3 actions and then different things you take one of those actions or 2 or 3, depending on how it's specified. All of these take one action. You have jaws, claw, tail, and wing. The jaws is plus 29 to hit. If it has a reach of 15, if it hits, it does 3d12 plus 15 piercing damage plus 2d6 fire. Pretty heavy hit. The claw is plus 29 to hit. It's agile, so that multiple attack penalty mentioned a little bit ago is lessened a bit. Instead of minus 5 and minus 10, it's minus 4 and minus 8. This is reach of 10 feet, and to hit, it does 3d10 plus 15 slashing damage. Its tail is plus 27 to hit, reach of 20 feet. 3d12 plus 13 slashing, and its wing is plus 27 to hit. Also agile, 15 feet reach, and its damage is 2d10 plus 13 slashing. A lot of options to pick from. I'm looking at it. I don't see like, oh, this is definitely the optimal path through it. It's just kind of situational, especially because like differences in damage types between like piercing, slashing, bludgeoning matter a lot more in Pathfinder. So just picking what's appropriate, I would imagine an adult red dragon would be smart enough to do so.
Yeah, I mean, likely if you just we're going to use all 3, ignoring like the frenzy and breath weapon and those options down below. You know, jaws and 2 claw attacks will probably do you, but about like the difference of 1 or 2 damage when we're talking about an average damage per round in the 70s, 80s. So it doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, it hits hard. If it really focuses, it could down someone very fast. It does have arcane innate spell casting of a DC of 30 with spell DC of 35. It could cast suggestion and has 2 cantrips which are cast, upcast at heightened to 6th. You know, not use, D&D terms of detect magic and read aura. I'm not super familiar with these spells. I don't know if these worth really diving into these.
I think the names honestly kind of take care of it. Suggestion, not going to really be used in combat too much, but it fits the red dragon subjugating people aspect. Could be used in combat, I guess, but if depends on where the fight's at, we'll say. Detect magic, obviously good for a dragon to know if there's magic. I mean, that's the long and short of it. They can see the party walking in and know, okay, they've got tons of magical spells on them. And it does say, I feel like this can be useful in terms of like finding what type of magic. So when it's heightened to third, you learn the school of magic for the highest level effect within range that the spell detects. If multiple effects are equally strong, the GM determines which you learn. And then if it's heightened to fourth, you also pinpoint the source of the highest level magic. Like for an imprecise sense, you don't learn the exact location, but can narrow down the source within a 5-foot cube. So, you know, if you have a really, really high powered magic item on the party, then the dragon knows who is the most important one to focus on. And sure, you can do this in combat, but those are probably things that you do while the party's walking up in some fashion, or they've already done it via, you know, scrying means or scouting means. I mean, just ways that you can in universe justify why the dragon knows what the party's packing.
Right. Yeah, that's also what a read aura does too. Text magical auras and around items and things. So yeah, it's just kind of a combination there.
Yeah, that's very true. So yeah, and heightened to six, read aura allows you to target any number of objects and you can learn the school of magic, whether or not the item is magical. And if the object is illusory, you detect this only if the effects level is lower than the level of your read aura spell. Interesting.
So yeah, if you try and get all those magic frost weapons to go take that new dragon, it'll know.
Right.
And also suggestion, you said not combat, but it absolutely can be combat. It's two actions. Can be done in combat, and you could suggest, of course, and it's basically the D&D suggestion spell, but it lasts a minute instead of like up to 8 hours or until complete. And so you could really mess with someone's plan in combat.
Yeah, that's true. Though yep. It still has that rider of until the target has completed a finite suggestion or the suggestion becomes self-destructed or has other obvious negative effects. That's when it does become a little bit difficult because it is hard to justify, you know, we'll just say walking over and doing absolutely nothing when a dragon is there murdering your friends. It's one of those like, well, is that self-destructive or has an obvious negative effect? I'd probably say yes. There's a pretty negative effect to ignoring your friends getting murdered.
Okay. Moving on, then we have the breath weapons. This is two actions. The dragon breathes a blast of flame that deals 15d6 fire damage in a 50-foot cone. It has a DC 36 basic reflex save. And then it can't use its breath weapon again for 1d4 rounds. Crazy that's, damage.
Yeah, 52.5 average damage.
And actually, obviously, it's not as high as I thought. I guess if d6s stay, yeah, don't get too crazy.
Correct, yeah, 3.5 times 15. So, yeah, but it is a DC 36 reflex save, and it's a 50-foot cone. So the expectation is that you're hitting multiple people at once with it. But no, it would not be worth it in comparison to attacking with jaws and claws and everything. As I was mentioning, that's more in the average of like 70 to 80. I didn't do the math on it, but that was quick napkin math. And it's only good if you're getting them grouped up.
Yeah. I kind of like it that it's less. I think that I always felt not great with D&D's dragons where the breath weapon is like
the main damage dealer.
Yeah, the main damage dealer to the point where, I mean, people need to prepare for it and split up and like can be one-shotting people of appropriate level. Like the damage is so high. It's like basically waiting until it recharges. And it is a recharge where you need to roll like a 6 on a d6 for it to come back. The fight seems to be trying to minimize those. Where this one, it's the breath weapon, everything has its tactical uses because you could hit a bunch of people and really weaken the party, but 50 damage at 14 is not like, it's a lot, but that's not like one-shotting people. I like that band. It feels more in balance.
Yeah, unless you critically fail, in which case that might, well, I don't know about one shot, but it's going to do a lot of damage.
Yeah, 30d6, yeah. Or I guess it just doubles, but yeah.
Yeah. And I do also like the fact that it's not a recharge. It can't use the breath weapon again for 1d4 rounds. That's just, in general, better tracking during the recharge. I don't know. It's too swingy. You might get a fight where it doesn't come up once. You might get a fight where every single round you're able to use that breath weapon. It doesn't feel right. I do sort of wish, with the limited experience I have, I do sort of wish that the breath weapon was 1d4 plus 1 rounds, because this does still run into the issue where they might just get it every single round. There's a 25% chance they'll get it from one round to the next. You know, if it was 1d4 plus 1, that's now not possible. And it has ways to continue fighting probably for that long without any issue. So you will see it multiple times no matter what. It's just a matter of how balanced is this fight going to be.
Yeah. This is actually in the DM's favor. So there was always that hope in the Dungeons and Dragons variant with the 5 or 6 recharge that it just never came back. And you're absolutely right to identify that it just kind of ruined things. It's like, oh shit, this is just like, you either find a way to avoid this or you all die. Sucked. But yeah, this one, I think it is a little dull, but I get why it's going for that.
I'll take dull and consistent. Go ahead.
Yeah. It does also have the option of coming back sooner. You have the Draconic Momentum. The dragon recharges its breath weapon whenever it scores a critical hit with the strike. And with plus 29s to hit, there's a decent chance it's going to be critting a decent amount. Though then again, at that level, the PC's armor is also, AC is also very, very high. So...
yeah, I think it's still likely if you're, you know, you're doing that Draconic Frenzy, which I guess I'll just read right now because we're talking about it.
Because so, yeah, weird order.
Draconic Frenzy, 2 actions. The dragon makes 2 claw strikes and 1 wing strike in any order. So 2 actions to make 3 attacks. There's a high chance that one of those is going to crit. So it really does actually sound more like the breath weapon is going to be a tactical choice when it makes sense, more so than a fight ender, like we were saying, you know, fifth edition's more is. So, I mean, I like that. I like that it's got an option to come back through that. And, you know, you're probably not going to want to use it every time regardless. One thing I wasn't sure on with the Draconic Frenzy, I'm assuming I understand how this works, but it says you make 2 claw strikes and 1 wing strike in any order. Those still take the multiple attack penalty, right? Because it doesn't specify...
Right, yeah.
Okay.
That would be my assumption. Usually that's always the case unless it specifically says otherwise.
Okay. So that's good and, you know, gives a way to, I guess, gives the DM a reason not to just use the jaw strike, because when you're looking at such high to hits, it does feel like it's like, well, you know, who cares that I've got only a plus 19. The jaw strike is the strongest, so let me just do 3 of those in a row, which... isn't really exciting just from a play experience. Like, you've got this whole stat block. You don't want to just be smashing the A button over and over again, like my younger cousin playing Super Smash Brothers. You know, you need to switch it up a bit.
Yeah. And yeah, with the Draconic Frenzy, I think that solidifies it in there. It gives a good reason to use claw and wing. Tail is the big reach, which, and it also does a lot, 3d12s to hit. And then the jaw for attacks of opportunity. I think that would play nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the stat block of Adult Red Dragon. There are variants which we could get to. I don't know if we want to jump into those right away or talk more about everything as a whole.
As a whole, wow, what a terrifying fight. Yeah. I really am. Like, I'm having a hard time kind of playing it out of how a party would be able to overcome this. And that's a good feeling, I think. I mean, it really seems like, okay, unless they're, you know, exploiting that cold damage and, you know, finding ways to really give themselves an edge, be it from the cold damage or something else, this is going to be a super hard fight, even at level 14. I mean, sure, your attack bonuses go up, your AC goes up, whatever. But, you know, if we just say a white room and everything is 50-50 in terms of whether or not you hit or they hit, the dragon is going to take you down before you take them down. And that's kind of what's important here, is that they've got the upper hand. It's a dragon. It should.
Right.
They're kind of iconic.
Yeah. But you can make them even cooler by making them spellcasters.
Ooh, how do I do that, Ellie?
So you read the Chromatic Dragon Spellcaster's thing at the beginning of the page.
Oh. I have to read.
So each type features a sidebar and spellcasting dragons of that type. To make one a spellcaster, you remove the dragon's Draconic Frenzy and Draconic Momentum abilities. That's the one where two actions for three attacks, or the momentum is getting breath attack back on crits, and give it the spells outlined in the sidebar. You can swap out any number of these with other arcane spells, provided you keep the same number of spells for each level. You might also want to increase the dragon's intelligence or charisma modifier by one to reflect its mastery of magic. So basically those last two features and kind of actions we talked about, you get rid of them and then just give them a whole bunch of spells. As an adult red dragon, the spells by default that you get, so they would be DC 35 and attack plus 29. You get everything you get as a young red dragon. All right, we don't need to read
it's
all
a long
list. I've missed that.
Yeah, that's builds. Fine.
Okay. That's you a get lot. A We're lot not going to read spells. Them all. But, and also, you can just change them as you want. So,
it is interesting, though, how it gets rid of the Draconic Frenzy. It makes sense. I mean, you are probably going to be casting a lot more spells, seeing as you have so many options. But I could see this being an extremely different fight from having the spell casting.
Absolutely, because I mean there's a lot of spells that they get. Three fourth level spells, three third level spells, three second level, three first, bunch of cantrips, then that's just the young. Then they get three six level spells. Yeah, it's basically two or three for everything.
And you get this really great combo where you can use Wall of Force, which is actually even stronger in Pathfinder than it is in 5th edition, and you can just Wall of Force the party in and then just blast them with your breath weapon, and that's fun. That's good. That's a good time for everyone.
Your party probably deserves that.
I mean, I'm sure they do. There's nothing I love more than when I know a fight is winnable and all of you are just kind of like, what the fuck? Like you made this way too hard, and I'm like, Just keep playing. Just keep playing. It all comes out. But when your back's against the wall, that's when you have the most fun.
Right.
It's overcoming the challenge.
Yeah.
But one thing that I don't want to say I didn't love, but there's the expectation, I guess, is just that, you know, it's the same level if you follow what's specified, removing Draconic Frenzy or removing Draconic Momentum. I do almost wish there was just like a, hey, if you just add spellcasting and don't take away anything, you're adding this much difficulty. It does seem like it's almost more of a soft science compared to a hard one, which is not common otherwise. Even when it says like, raise their intelligence or charisma modifier by one or two, you know, it's like, whichever makes sense. It's like, okay, well, how does that affect the math? Because we always talk about how the math is so finite and changing it even this tiny little bit might change a bunch. It's like, well, if I'm not sure of what that change is going to do, then I might overdo it. I might underdo it, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope by the time you're running an adult red dragon or even a young red dragon, you're more comfortable and familiar. Not you specifically, just like, you know, people in general.
Sure.
More comfortable and familiar with those tweaks and specifics and know how to kind of rein that in for their party. Like watch the pick.
And hopefully they look in the rules and find the part that says dragon, chromatic, and then read the rules on how to change spellcasting instead of just assuming that you add the spellcasting if you want them to be a spellcaster. Because again, not specified on the stat block. But you can also make them a shape changer.
Yeah.
It adds the action change shape.
And that dragon takes on the appearance of any small or medium humanoid. This doesn't change its speed or attack and damage bonuses with its strikes. I love that part. But it could change what the strike deals typically to bludgeoning. So like it's, I mean, the adult red dragon hits really, really freaking hard. And so like you shapeshift down to like some like meek little gnome who's super skinny and it could still punch people for like 3d12 plus 15 plus 2d6 fire damage.
Yeah, and they can still breathe fire, right? Like, I'm not seeing it doesn't change anything else, is what it seems
like. Right, I think they still have 150 foot fly speed. I mean,
right, that one I'm loving because they're just gonna like take off like Goku and just go shooting out of the sky. But it could be a really great way to let your party know that they don't know what they're getting into. You know, they think it's just an NPC, they're getting a little bit uppity, and a fight starts. And first strike this, he said, little gnome or something just clocks the fighter for 3d12 plus 15 plus 2d6 fire damage. And then it's just kind of that pause as the gnome then flies away. And you're like, what did we just make an enemy? Like, what just happened?
So I'm just reading up, like specifically there's the polymorph trait. I'm seeing if it says anything about like losing your features. I don't know. It's not super clear.
It doesn't look like it. I don't see anything that would specify that you lose your, it's only if you're like, if a dragon transforms into a sheep, they realistically cannot attack.
Right. Though raw, they could, because it says it specifically calls out in the special rules for the dragon's chain shape that it does not lose its strike bonuses and damage.
Yeah.
So you just get bit by a sheep for 3d12 plus 15 plus 2d6 fire damage.
Stay back.
If I was a red dragon, I think that's a joke I'd play. Just like hang out as like a goat in like some farmer's field. Some like uppity adventure comes around.
I'm just imagining like getting bit and just like exploding into flames and just taking off like into the sky. A twinkle left behind.
Yeah. As the goat.
Yes.
Yeah, still as the goat, just like rocketing off.
Yeah, that's good. Make all the dragon shape changers. That's now a requirement, not a suggestion.
All right, more serious with the shape changing though. It is does just add a lot of layers to an adventure around a dragon. You know, dragons are very intelligent and have grand goals, usually like to try and take over an entire area, if not the world, and probably generally see themselves as the best typical dragon shit. And so having one that could change shape and infiltrate into things, it's interesting. There's a lot that can be done with that. The D&D technically does it only with metallic dragons.
Correct.
Which felt like that was lacking. I know at some point, I don't remember specifically where, we've talked about that on the show, like just give chromatic dragon shape changes as well. Let the villains do it too. And it's just more interesting. So I'm glad that it's here.
But otherwise, in terms of how you would use this, it's a dragon. Use it in dragon ways. I mean, really, it's iconic for a reason. And this is really making me want to have a dragon fight, but I won't do it in fifth edition. Right now it makes zero sense where our campaign's at, but I'm itching for it. It's been a couple years.
Like a big dragon fight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because we had a dragon fight, but I think it was young.
Yeah, that was, as I mock you all in game, it was just a young dragon. It wasn't that impressive. Right. But, that is good to say, though, where this has a lot of stuff that you can steal for 5th edition. There's no reason you can't. I mean, really, the dragon heat, the aura aspect, steal. The way that the fear ability works, steal it. It's probably going to, you know, tweak the math, because the math doesn't always work out, but if you're willing to have a more complicated fear effect, you can do it. Steal it. Probably more of the other stuff doesn't really matter too much. The breath weapon, maybe if you want to change it to the 1d4 rounds instead of the recharge ability, that's not really shaking up your entire play or anything. But Will, you mentioned earlier, the weaknesses, resistances aspect, totally easy to steal. I think there's a good amount that you can take from this to make your 5th edition dragon fights a little more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of little things like that in Pathfinder.
And if you want to make
just running in Pathfinder.
Or just running in Pathfinder, that is obviously an option.
Yeah.
But if you're like us and currently finishing up a 5th edition campaign and not
finishing up, oh, go fuck yourself.
You're
we have
correct.
6 more years.
If you're at the very beginning of a 5th edition campaign and see no end in sight.
We're also like a year into it too, but we do long campaigns, so it's what we enjoy. I'm giving you a hard time, but yeah. I do enjoy the long form campaigns, and I get not switching in the middle, and I don't want to cut it off short because there's been a lot of focus on character development and where arcs go and blah, 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 blah.
Right. but if you're looking to maybe, you know, change up your dragon fights a little bit more. One suggestion that I always have is to buy dice from fanrolldice.com, specifically using the code MM10 and getting yourself like some dice that fit the dragon that you want to use. And then you can like show it off to your party like, hey, I bought dice specifically for this fight and I'm going to murder you. It's really just a great way to add fun, camaraderie, and you save 10% off using the code MM10. So kind of hard to argue with.
Mm-hmm. Definitely worth it. Yeah, every single encounter you run should have its own unique dice as the DM.
Let's not get absurd here. Maybe you buy a set per element, and if you can't tie it to that monster, then you probably need more dice. Let's set some reasonable limits here.
Okay, yeah, that's reasonable.
And make sure you bulk purchase because you get free shipping on orders over $50. So, you know, let's play it smart here, everyone. We're here for optimizing at least a little bit. Thank you, as always, to our patrons, Cameron Z, Ed G, Craig A, Brian H, Isaac M, Jeff W, Star Shinobi, McKinnon T, Vincent M, Barents, Bob F, Gray, Joe P, Muddleweight, Rick D, Sir Laugh-A-Lot, Sentinel D20, Tyler S, Adam A, and Rob K. You all are fantastic. So that's it.
Cool. As always, thanks for watching.